This is The Stark Truth, hosted by Robert Stark. Brought to you by StarkTruthRadio.com. Robert Stark is an American journalist and political commentator. You can listen to his podcast at www.StarkTruthRadio.com.
This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with Bjorn Erik Sorensen. He is a filmmaker based out of Norway. Bjorn, it's great talking to you.
Thank you for having me.
What originally inspired you to become a filmmaker?
I mean, it started out kind of when I was young. My dad bought this Video 8 camcorder. Not the 8mm, but the video from I think Sony had this Handycam camera. That was kind of the first meeting for me with filmmaking, because I jumped into it, and with my friends we did all these kind of small films. And I mean, at that time, it wasn't that, I mean, no one of my friends had a camera. And I mean, today it's kind of crazy, but because everyone have camera today. But that time, that was kind of the thing that started it out. And in the beginning, I didn't really know, I mean, a film director, you as a kid, 11-year-old kid, you didn't really understand what a film director was. But you did understand that film was made with a camera and a mic and all kind of stuff. So that was the thing I started out with doing, being a cinematographer, actually, mostly in TV and editing in commercials. So that was my starting point. But I felt that the stories that I kind of started out when I was young, want to create some stories that kind of got me also when I understand that if I want to make my stories, I need to direct them myself and bring other people to it that is much better than me on camera and sound and everything. So that was kind of the start. Then I went to a film school in the UK, National Film and Television School, and that was a great meeting with a real cinema for me.
What film directors had the biggest influence on you, and were you more influenced by a Norwegian film or European film or American film?
I think that when I was young, it's kind of the American filmmakers that you see at cinema for the first time. So obviously Steven Spielberg was a kind of a great filmmaker that everyone loved his films and all that, and I kind of was part of that. But then when I dug more into film, you kind of find more different types of film directors. And it was more to film than just Hollywood and America. So I kind of got around and looked at Norwegian films, European films, American films. I've looked at a lot of maybe independent American films. I like them a lot. I can't say that there was one director that made the basic or the base for me to make movies. I like all kinds of films really, because they it depends on what kind of mood you are in when you're going to watch a movie, and sometimes I'm a bit tired and I could look at maybe a bad Hollywood movie, or I could look at a good one as well, but other times I need something more, and I dug into my archive and find something a bit more demanding. So, but I think films, as a filmmaker, you need to see all kind of films, really, both to be inspired, but also to see what kind of filmatic tools works or doesn't, in a way.
So your most recent film is Broke. This is part of a trilogy. What is the overall theme of the trilogy?
I would say it's like a coming-of-age trilogy. And it wasn't meant to be that. It started out with the first film, Reckless. And after we have done that film, both the writer and myself, we liked the atmosphere in it. We liked the actress, who was very good, and we felt that we wanted to do something more with that atmosphere and that characters that we had in the first film. And then we thought maybe we should continue on the same page with this coming of age idea. So that's the kind of the main kind of framework on it. For me, it's more like being topics where we are talking about kids and things that they come up, problems or ideas they have in being a youngster, in a way.
Were any of these stories influenced by your own adolescence?
Yeah, in a way, but more, it's more taking bits and pieces of both my my writer and myself, and also the writer I'm working with, we are also teaching at a film course with young people, so which a lot of dialogue with them, we get inspired about what they have to say and what they are thinking about. So there's a lot of small things going into an idea when we work with it. I mean, we didn't have an idea what we're going to do. It was more like we started to write about this character, and then like on the first film, we write half the story, and then we found out that that wasn't really the character we want to talk about. We want to talk about the another character that was more like supporting a character for the story, so we went another way. That's the way we kind of work with our stories. I mean, when we wrote Reckless, at the same time I lost my my sister, and she was kind of in the back of our head, or at least in my head, when we wrote about that. And a lot of small things from her was filled into that main character in the first film. And then when we came to Broke, it felt right to just keep to this young female character, really. That is probably also part of the theme in the trilogy, because the last film that is still part of an idea yet, but we also have a female main character there. So so that's probably the overall idea about this trilogy.
Would you say the overall theme is dealing with personal struggles and overcoming, whether it's a trauma or some kind of conflict?
Yeah, I would say that. I would say that it is, I mean, young people, also when I was young myself, all these things you are dealing with, psychologically and also around you at school with your parents and everything, it's a big change in you when you're getting older and have to take more responsibilities, and there's a lot of things you ask yourself about, and that you are obviously not sure about as well. So all these things are kind of part of these films.
How would you describe your cinematographic style?
For these films, we started out with an idea of being very tight to the or close to the actor and the character, and obviously because of budget things and all that, we had to find a way to still make it as cinematic as possible, but also I wanted this flow in it. I want to follow the characters, and it kind of got part of an idea of being handheld documentary style kind of thing. At least I was when I talked with my cinematographer, I said to him that let's stick to the character as much as possible, and I like that idea about holding the camera for quite some time, so you can really get to know the character. We did try to do that, I think the camera was on a tripod maybe a couple of times. Other than that, it was handheld all the time. And that style was also taken over to Broke. But in Broke, we also had a few Steadicam shots. Again, the same idea, to get this fluent feel of the story.
I notice you have a lot of close-ups on the characters' faces, and you focus on their emotions. I was talking to this Danish filmmaker, Julius Telmer. He's based out of L.A., and he commented on the same thing in his film. Is that a common trait in Scandinavian cinema?
I'm not sure it is, but I think that if you stick close to your character, I think you get closer to emotions as well. But that, if you put the camera to a character or close to a character, it doesn't mean that you get the emotions. You need to have characters that have a real depth to it, so you kind of understand the character and understand their movement and understand their how they want to lay out their journey. So it's a kind of combination. Whether that is more a Scandinavian European thing than an American thing, I'm not sure about of that, because I think that filmmakers do that when they feel they get close to or can get close to the character. I have seen a lot of American independent films as well that they stick close to the character, and I think that's because as an audience, we want to be close to them and understand them, and we want to see that those small details in the face. We want to see how the eye blink. We want to see how their thoughts are going through their heads. So I like looking at people and be close to them, and I think that's the kind of idea with my way of doing it, at least. So and somehow when I'm sitting in the cutting room, I'm thinking, oh, I should have been there even longer, but then we did cut it too early, so that's something I had to work on.
Is the film industry in Norway primarily independent films, or is there an equivalent of Hollywood, or does the Norwegian government finance independent films?
Mostly Norwegian films are funded partly from the government. You would not have a film 100% funded from the government, but a lot of or most films in Norway do that. But we also have people who invest in Norwegian films and films that are funded from other European fundings, and so it's kind of a different way of doing it at all. And also now after all these streaming platforms, there are new possibilities, I think. So, but we don't have this big Hollywood system in Norway, so we wouldn't be able to do that kind of big budget movie in the same way. But there are some big budget movies in Norway as well, but that then they have to get funding from a lot of different places, both government money, but also investors goes into it.
Are there some Scandinavian filmmakers who have worked with Hollywood? I think the only one who's extremely famous is Lars von Trier, who's known to Americans.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, we are lucky in Norway because a lot of Norwegian filmmakers are trying to, a lot of Norwegian filmmakers managed to come over to America and try American movies. Norwegian or Scandinavian TV series are quite hot now. I think a lot of Norwegian filmmakers want to do Norwegian films but obviously also American and international films. But we are, again, we are quite lucky in Norway that we have this funding from the government, even if the money isn't, there isn't that much money, and there is a lot of filmmakers, so there's a lot of people who are missed out to do their films or TV series, whatever. So then there are, if you get the possibility to do an American film, you would probably go and do it.
How did you cast the actors? Did you discover them from existing films? And what characteristics were you looking for in the particular actors for your most recent, for Broke and for your other film?
I have been using like an online audition where I have been putting up some ads both on audition sites and by Facebook and different places. So for both those films, I have been trying to find them amongst young people who want to try out an acting part in a short film. And that have been a very nice way to do it, because then you get to see a wide range of people, and also those who isn't necessarily in anything else. They have come over the ad, and they say, "Oh, I want to try that." And they try to do an audition tape back home in front of their computer and send it over, and that's not that difficult. So on the first one, I think I got a couple of hundreds, and then I made a selection about 20 or something, and then I had them in for a I called them in for a an audition, and then we did some rehearsal things, and we talked a lot. And I like to use a lot of time with actress before shooting. Do rehearsals, and also I want them to bring their ideas and thoughts about the character to the table, because I mean, the script is just saying what where we are starting and where we're going, but the human emotions in it is what the actress brings to it, and that's important for me to dig into before we shoot.
The story of Broke, the plot, is about a girl in high school, and her father was a wealthy businessman who loses all his money. He basically becomes totally broke, and she's devastated by this, and she feels a sense of shame. What inspired you to come up with this story? Was it based on a true story?
No, it wasn't really based on a true story, but at the time when we started up with this story, the economic downfall in Europe was kind of part of all news all the time, and we kind of connected that to Norway as well. I mean, Norway is looked as a very wealthy and rich country, but when the economy get that kind of down downhill, there is a lot of problem in a rich country like Norway as well. A lot of people can or lose their jobs, especially within the oil business. There was a lot of problems in there. So, I mean, it's the idea again actually started from somewhere else, because it started with an image of a gun in a school bag, but that kind of was more like a plot thing, and we didn't really like it, but we liked the image, and then we this idea about economic trouble within the family came up. And there have also been a story about a politician in Norway who was investigated for fraud, and he ended up in a car somewhere in the woods and ended his life. And that's a very horrifying thought about Norway. We are a small country, and if you are exposed to very tough allegations within things like economy, that's a hard thing, I think.
Because there's a general perception that Norway has a generous social safety net, and there's the economic aspect to it, but there's also the aspect of wealth equating to one's social status and their place in society. And if someone has a very prosperous background and then they lose it all, that sort of impacts their place in society and their sense of self-worth if they base their personal self-worth on their economic prosperity.
Yeah, I think that everywhere money says something about your status. And even in if we're in Norway, we have a good safety net if things happen. And in a way, Norwegians are very alike. There isn't that many big social differences in a way. But on the other hand, there have become a lot more rich people in Norway, and the difference between those who have a lot of money and those who don't have that much money has increased. So in a way, you can see it also, amongst young people who comes from a place where they have money and those who don't. So I believe it is an issue also in Norway. Maybe it's more, I'm not an expert on America, but I believe that in America you will see the differences much more, and it's a part of American society. But in Norway, it isn't that big of a difference, not in general, but when you talk about different individuals, you will see a lot of differences. But money is important for a lot of people, and I think that if you lose money when you have a lot, that's trouble for you.
Yeah, it's probably more extreme in America. I've noticed that I'm from LA, so there's definitely LA's a place where money is like the most important thing.
Mm. Yeah, that's kind of the view. Maybe Norwegian and Scandinavian also sees America as that money rules a lot in America. It doesn't do that in the same way, but that might also be because there is a lot of people in America. Norway is a big country, but we have just 5.5 million people. So in a way, I think it's probably in a way easier to find a system that works on. Then also it does have to do with tradition as well. But I think that in Norway we are probably looking a lot to America and want to see the American dream as something special and something we want. But I think that the Norwegian society is very it's a very fine place to. Oh, I'm not sure. I'm babbling away now, Robert.
There is a strong sense of suspense in Broke, one of the scenes, I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but there's a scene with a gun. What are some of your tools that you use as a director to build up that, create that sense of suspense in the narrative?
A gun in itself is something that is fearful and something that we, at least in Norway, we're not used to see guns in an ordinary situation.
Are guns illegal?
Guns are legal, but in Norway, there is a lot of controls on guns, so you can't just go to a gun or a weapon shop and buy a gun. That's not possible. You have to be through a certain course, and you need to be checked up before you can buy a gun, really. And there is a lot of rules about how the guns has to be safely stored in your house, and so there's a lot of regulation about weapon in Norway. But there is guns, and guns for hunters, guns for people competition. Guns. I mean, there is a lot of guns in that kind of way. But to find guns, like in this film, in a school bag, it's not unlikely that it can happen, because we have seen in Scandinavia a few years ago there was an incident in Finland with a shooting at a school. And that's obviously something we also are scared of in Norway. But luckily we haven't had any situation with that yet. And hopefully we won't. But that, as a, for the film, that have been for these characters we have in the film, this was a good way of keeping this unease feeling in the story and for the characters, and using this gun as a plot in the movie, but also has something to do with the main character. So the suspense in it is obviously the scariness of having a gun at a school, because that's a scary thing, really.
How did you choose the locations for both of the films? Were most of them filmed in suburban Oslo?
Yeah. The writer and I, when we are writing stories, I have said to him, I want to do stories that I can shoot just outside my front door. I don't want to go miles to find good locations, because if you just search, you get great locations around where we live, and I think that's important for these stories, at least, because it's a Norwegian suburban, and it's not Oslo. We have done a lot of films from Oslo in Norway, and I'm a bit tired of that city. And I like the idea of making up your own cinematic city. So both of those films, you don't really know which city it is, and if you live here, and you know the locations, you would understand that they don't actually fit together the way we have used it. So make a universe that works for the film, and not try to make a portrait of the city we're filming in.
for an international audience, it's obviously in Norway, but for a Norwegian audience, you wanted it to be kind of vague, where it could take place just about anywhere.
Yeah, anywhere in a Norwegian suburbia, really. Because, Oslo is the capital and obviously the biggest city in Norway, but it isn't that big. Suburban towns or cities are kind of similar to each other. It's more about the feel of being part of a place where things happen. It could be north, south, west, or wherever, really.
IMDb says that Broke is in post-production. When is the official theatrical release?
It is. We haven't screened it in Norway yet, and hopefully we'll do that in May. We are looking into get it in some few more festivals. It have been screened in America actually
Was it the International Film Festival in St. Louis?
Yes, it was the International. That was kind of the first one. So in a way, that's the premiere, at least the North America premiere. So hopefully this year we will get it around a bit much more than we did in the end of 2017.
Is it available? So it's not released on iTunes yet?
No, we have been in dialogue with a distribution company, hopefully within this year we will have it at some kind of platform, but we don't know where and when yet.
So your first step is to travel to different film festivals?
Yeah, that's what we work with now.
Your other film, Reckless, is about a girl who's supposed to babysit her younger brother, and then she ends up getting into trouble, and it leads to a lot of chaos. Can you talk about how you came up with that story and that plot?
Yeah, the story started out with we having a location, actually. Just close to where we work, there is an outdoor swimming pool. It was summer, and we kind of liked that location. It was warm, it was nice, there was a lot of people. So that was the starting point, actually. And then this idea about having this older sister babysitting her younger brother is something I remember from when I was a kid, and it's very typical thing to do, I believe. So, and with having this location with the pool where people meet, where people want to get to know each other and all that, and in the summertime, and the young people, in this case, a young girl who find interest in a couple of boys, and she leaves her responsibility, and that gets some consequences on the way, also because she is in the story she doesn't really want to babysit her little brother. So that's kind of why she tries to push the limits, and it doesn't really end up very good. But on the same time, the things in this story occur as it does. I mean, it's part of life, and no one is responsible for what's happening. We are just, I'm just trying to show that human beings are doing what they want and what they try to. Oh, I don't get the word.
I guess the word reckless sums it up.
Yeah, in a way, I think that's a good title, because it sums up the idea of the story. Absolutely. Mm.
Why did you choose to go with English titles rather than Norwegian titles? Was this primarily to cater to an international audience?
Yeah, that's part of it. And I think that we use a lot of English words in Norwegian, and it felt naturally for us to use that. And also in daily life we're using a lot of English words, so it was for us very natural to do. And also we were definitely thinking about going out with the film outside Norway, and it's easier to keep one title than having a Norwegian and then a translation title.
Well, the film Reckless was shown to American audiences at film festivals, and it was at a movie house in LA. Was there any controversies about the subject matter to an American audience?
No. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to go to the American festivals where it was screened. But actually, I never got any feedback about that from the American audience. So I can't really answer that, because it was selected at the festivals, and I believe they selected it because the film is good, not just about the nudity part that the film has.
Were you concerned at some point about potentials of censorship?
We did talk about it, but we wanted to make the story, and we didn't want to think about that really, because this is a short film, and we want to keep to stay to put to our idea and follow that. Maybe it would be a bigger issue if we were talking about a feature film that is where you put a lot more money into and there's a lot of more people involved, but on the other hand, the story itself is not about the nudity that is in it. It's more about the people who are forced or have their inner forced thoughts or feelings. So no, I can't say that we have been thinking much about whether it would be censored or not.
And I guess Norway probably has a much different attitude than America about those issues. I noticed America has a kind of an interesting attitude. On one hand, there's one side of our culture is very pornographic, but in some ways American culture has a puritanical streak, so it's a little bit of an odd attitude.
Hmm. Yeah, maybe we also have that in Norway in a much smaller scale, but obviously in TV, in films and everything, this is an issue that that is quite openly talked about. But on the other hand, it depends on the story, and it depends on how you do it and all that. And obviously on the first film here, we had the discussions that in like on festival panels and things that was going towards things that wasn't really expected for us as making films, because they people are seeing, if you take out the scenes, the nudity scenes in this, obviously those will stand out and be very brutal in a way. But if you see it as part of the whole story, I think that it doesn't get pornographic or anything else or anything like that. It's just part of this character's journey. You can see, I mean, in we screened at the festival in France, and there was this teacher coming up to me afterwards. She was an old teacher, actually, she just had to say to me that she was very fond of the film. It was very emotional, and she thought it was very true to what she thought was real. So I'm sure that you find people all around the globe that really don't have issues with nudity and sexuality, and then you have the other side that is very kind of different from that. But I'm sure what I know about American society also, it is quite I mean, I believe that violence in film is much more okay than nudity and sexuality in American films, and I think that's an issue in itself, actually.
Are you saying that there's little violence in Scandinavian film, right?
No, I'm not saying that, but the American films, if you see American films, I think that you probably get much more violence than you get naked or nudity scenes. And in a way, nudity and sexuality is a much more natural part of a character's life than violence.
You have an upcoming film that is part of this trilogy. Are you in production yet?
No, that's not in production. It's just on the stage as an idea. So, I've just on the cutting room now. We have another short that is not part of this trilogy, and it's a 1 minute short called Hockey. And it's shot on an iPhone, so that's a project that I just want to do something different now, but it's still with young characters, but I want to push myself into a very, very tight little format and try that out. So that's what I'm working on right now. Other than that, I have a couple of feature film projects, and we have some TV series ideas. So whether the third film will be in getting production in near future or much later, I'm not sure. That depends on several things.
Was Reckless also on iTunes?
No, Reckless is on iTunes. Broke is not there yet.
We're getting close to the end of the show. Is there anything else you'd like to add about your upcoming film, Broke, before I wrap things up?
No. Yeah, I mean, I just if people would like to see it, they have to just join our Facebook site. So then news about where you can see it will come up as soon as we get a platform for it. So that would probably be it.
Do you have another upcoming film festival in the United States?
Not for the moment. We are waiting for some answers, so hopefully there will be a few more quite soon, hopefully.
Bjorn Erik Sorensen, it's been an excellent show. I'd like to thank you so much for being on.
Thank you very much for being with you.